What's up, fam? I'm your host, Jack Setterman. Joining me today, as always, my co-host and longtime best friend, Abe Granoff. Abe, what is on your mind today?
What a weekend for the lads, man. What a weekend for the lads. Outside of Saturday early afternoon, I think this weekend came up all snapback. I mean, the Sixers take game four with me in the building yesterday. And what did you do on Saturday this weekend? What did you do?
Woke up, hung out, went to like a horse track, watched the Knicks. Pathetic effort in game three, but that's okay. Goals to get one in Miami. And then
we did what we needed to do, get one in Miami. Or you didn't do
well,
it
we
yet.
We still haven't done that, but yeah. If we get it and then we have home game five, yeah, that's what we needed to do. But then that's just good. Watch some horse racing.
Horse racing. Who won?
Which race? Because there's a lot of races. There's 14.
Probably the last one's the most important one, right?
No, that's actually race 12 is the Derby. There's two races after. For the sickos. Me. For the sickos.
Right. So, what happened in the 12th race, Jack?
In the 12th race, what happened? So, Forte was the favorite for the race. He got scratched early in the morning. He's kind of like the golden child.
Typically how Matt Forte usually did on Sunday mornings.
Exactly. And in the Derby, there were 19 horses racing. Big field. Anything could happen. And then there was just this little pony in the back who made a nice little charge at the end and ran away with the roses.
And he went by the name of
Mage.
I'd never heard of him before. Nobody told me to bet on him. I didn't see him on any platforms whatsoever. It's a little sad.
You were instructed to bet Mage on the
day. Did you happen to financially benefit from said pony?
Yes. So let me give a little brief history for those who might have missed the Kentucky Derby. Me and the intern, along with our friends, were front and center for Mage winning the Kentucky Derby. So we, Snapback Sports is partnered with an app called Commonwealth. App is where you can buy shares in a horse. One of the first horses that Commonwealth ever offered went by the name of Mage. When we are working on the partnership, the guys at Commonwealth, Brian Docs Tater and Chase Chamberlain, they're the two co-founders, were like, come down to Miami. We have this horse racing in his first race. It'll be fun. So me and the intern, you know, packed our bags, went down to Miami, and we get to the track at 12. And what?
Kentucky.
I'm taking you way back.
Put my feet up. Someone pour me a drink.
Yeah. I've been with Mage for months now. So we get to Miami, get to the track at like noon, and they're like, oh, our horse is running in like 12 minutes. So we go and bet on Mage 14-1. And this horse just dominates the field. We win, you know, $1,500. We're all excited. Got the rest of the day up in Miami. And then we keep talking with Commonwealth. What else can we do? So we go down to a horse auction. They're like, oh, by the way, that horse you saw running that first race, he made it all the way to the fucking Kentucky Derby. Do you want to come? And we're like, duh. Like, obviously, let's go to the Kentucky Derby. So, I'm going to break the news right now. Casey and I actually do not own any shares of Mage. We found out about this beautiful horse after the fact of working with Commonwealth, after he had sold out. So, he sold out on the platform, obviously. But we're creating content with them. We're helping them promote their business. And you know, we become huge Mage people. How do you become the biggest Mage fan in the world? If you don't own shares of that horse, you put down $2,000 on the horse to win the race. So Casey and I chucked down pretty much all the change we had. For a multitude of reasons, we end up in the winner's suite circle when we were not supposed to be there. But hey, mistakes happen. Things happen for a reason. And the knock on Mage was he had the speed. He always breaks poorly.
Small
and out of
hands.
The eight gate. Yeah, exactly. Small hands, loose feet, you know, all the knocks. But he breaks poorly. And in the eight spot, it was a really good post position. If you can just get out ahead of a few of the horses, you're in clear air. So what does Mage do? Breaks
this sounds
like shit.
Let me pause for a second. This whole soliloquy and explanation sounds like when there's a big UFC fight coming up or the Olympics are on and everyone thinks they watch it once, they become a knowledge expert, and now you have all the terminology down. You're saying, well, you know, everyone knows you have to make it out of the break first and post and this and that. But anyway, I shouldn't tell you what to say because you have become the horse betting expert, horse racing expert. So continue.
So he breaks poorly out of the eight gate, which, by the way, I'm not a huge horoscope person, but you go to Louisville where Lamar Jackson played college football after Lamar Jackson signed the biggest contract in NFL history, and our horse is in the eight gate. I mean, I was feeling a little something there. And so, yeah, apparently even before the race, Mage was freaking out on TV. He was all fired up, calmed down for the race, breaks poorly. And we've got the video. The vlog this week is going to, I mean, we have the whole, literally the entire thing on video. And it's going to be hilarious because at one point Casey's like, shit, like we're cooked. Like we're in 18th for half the race. And then he just made a move, got to the outside, started running. And once he was in clear air and passed two fills, it was only, you know, a couple furlongs to go, maybe. See, I'm still
trying. Gallops.
Yeah, he had to gallop a little further. But once he got in that clear air, he was through. And, I mean, that was like you blacked out. Oh, that's why the video is going to be amazing. Fortunately, we have some video, but, like, those next 30 minutes, it's just, all right, you're freaking out, you're hugging, people are crying, high-fiving. And then the Kentucky Derby, because you just won the fucking Kentucky Derby, comes over, is like, let's go to the winner's circle, cross the track. They're doing roses. The jockey's family's there. The trainer's family's there. And
did you dogpile the horse?
We didn't dogpile the horse because, hopefully, knock on wood, he's going to be running in 2 weeks as we go for the Triple Crown. Then you go to the press conference. You go to the champagne room. Then we went to a steakhouse, eating and drinking until 1 a.m. And Casey and I won, like, we walk out of the track with 40 grand strapped to our chest.
I have a few questions. Yeah,
it was nuts.
Question number one. Genuinely, I want you to think a little bit about this. Was that the best day of your life?
So, legally, I can't say that since I just got engaged. My lawyers told me that, that could
cause a potential rift. I'll ask you one more time. Was that the best? Wait, hold on. You did the... All right, so you're saying legally because you got engaged, you can't say that.
Yeah.
How much money went out of your pocket from the engagement and how much money came into your pocket for the engagement for the horse race?
It's a very, very good point. Let's just say it was a sizable difference in movement in opposite directions for the two events. Casey is stamped. It's the best day of his life. So the new question, how I'm asking people to frame it is it the best sports day of your life? Mm. Sure. Well, once again, due to my lawyer's suggestion, I can't say that. But I feel like it's got to be. Like, you know, we're so lucky to get to do what we do, and all these experiences are amazing. And people are like, it's once in a lifetime. And I literally said to Casey before the race, I was like, look, he's 16-1. So we're at like a 5% chance that even wins the race. The odds that we're going to be doing content with the company when he wins the 16-1 race is like 4 million to 1. So it's not even once in a lifetime. Like, we were almost the poster children for this horse winning the 149th Kentucky Derby. It's everywhere. So yeah, it was pretty insane.
What does that amount of money look like?
It's not as much as you would probably think. I only had half of it because Casey took the other half home. But it's definitely the biggest win of my short betting career. At this point,
do you feel responsible when you inevitably give out a pick for next year's Kentucky Derby and that horse probably finishes last?
We'll see. Hopefully Commonwealth's got another one running by then that we can all own, which I think is the coolest part, is like they had 60 people at the track who like had ownership of this horse that felt like this was their horse running in the race. I mean, it was insane. Do I feel responsibility next year? Well, what I did
it's like
say,
you, it's like Gatorade color guy. Like now you're Derby guy.
Yeah. What I said though is this race will probably cost me more money than it made me because for the rest of my life, one, now I'm so deep in horse racing that like I'm probably going to have to buy a horse at some point in the future or many shares of a horse.
Maybe some e-horses.
Yeah, it's just going to turn into this whole thing where I end up down over the years. And like we're going to, I don't know, how much do I have to throw on Mage to win the Preakness? Like probably a couple thousand, you know, just
to...
I think you fade. No, we're not fade. There's no shower fade. The best part about the Preakness is... So it's in 2 weeks. The horses normally have a month plus to recover. That's why winning the Triple Crown so hard. But the Derby's 19 horses, and the Preakness is actually a faster race and less horses. They think Mage is going to go off anywhere from pick 'em to like 3-1. So it'll be like a favorite to win the race. And then, yeah, get us to Belmont. But, yeah, it's been insane. I'm so happy for those guys, for the Commonwealth guys who have created a business around this, and you know, they've wanted to win this thing their entire life. It's insane. They won the Kentucky.
The two most memorable parts for me, and I'm sorry you were upstage, but your little when you made it on TV and they showed the owner's box, your little like fist pump, you turn around and then you almost like do a horse gallop like this over to like Casey, but Casey stole the show. The intern stole the show with his somebody high five me double fist pump. Doesn't really know what to do with his hands. We need a gif out of that. That is just the perfect content to be posting for your show, for MLB the show, for everything. Yeah. But I honestly didn't watch the race. I forgot about it. I landed like an hour before. But watching it from afar, man, I mean, obviously I didn't take Mage because that's just how it goes. But it seems like you didn't really celebrate that night.
Oh, no, we celebrated. We went to Jeff Ruby Steakhouse, Seafood Tower, steaks, champagne till 1 in the morning. We had a flight at 5. And, you know, as the great Kobe Bryant said, job not finished.
Got two more.
On to crab cakes and horse racing, baby.
There we go.
All right. So you had a fun Sunday, like you said, weekend of snapback. You were in the building, the Wells Fargo Center, for game number 4. People are saying, we'll save that for my cuck of the week, but people are saying that it was a close game, a good game. James Harden hits a nice game winner at the end, a second of the series. How are we feeling? Tell me what the environment was like, because on TV, and I've said this to you before, I actually think ESPN does a bad job of showing the energy in Wells Fargo, but it really didn't seem like that crazy of an environment. And I know that it was obviously loud and exciting, but was it like one of those all-time, does it touch like NFC Championship at the Link?
No, I don't think anything really touches that I've been to. But what I will say is, okay, let's go back to Friday night. The Sixers, Joel Embiid's MVP speech, the Sixers come out flat, play a horrible game, Maxey, Harden, Tobias, terrible. Honestly, you didn't expect to win this in 5. I mean, I obviously said that because I'm sick in the head. But you came back 1-1, and you'd be a fool to tell yourself, like, we are going to go back to Boston 3-1. So I kind of assumed we'd split in Philly. And when I saw the MVP hype behind the speech, I was like, this makes sense, right? Joel's crying 10 minutes before the game. You're telling me that your best player is crying 10 minutes before the game, and you expect his fellow teammates to follow him into battle? Like, you can't have your best player crying before the game. That's what I chalk up on Friday. And then yesterday, so I didn't really get to watch Friday, because I was at this MMA event in Denver, which I'll talk about in a little, which was fucking awesome. And I didn't really get to watch it, but I saw the vibes on Twitter. I spoke to people that watch it, and energy and vibes were low. They were pissed at this team, everything. And what I kept telling people is, listen, if before the series I told you Joel Embiid is going to miss some time, we don't know if it's one game, we don't know if it's two games, and I said to you, would you take being down 2-1 after 3 at home? Every Sixers fan would have signed up for that right then and there. So I said, chill the fuck out. Let's go back to Boston 2-2. And then yesterday you get there, and you could tell there was a nervous energy in the building. You could tell. They get out to a good start. It's a good game. Then they go up 16 late in the third, early fourth, and Boston makes the run. And I turn to my brother and I go, this is happening again. We were sitting pretty much in similar seats to where we were game five against Atlanta. I was like, this is the biggest deja vu ever. I can look back on yesterday's game and say it was awesome, but in the same breath say, I don't even know if I had fun. I really don't. From the last like 7 minutes in the fourth to overtime, I was not enjoying where I was. I was not enjoying it at all. Even when I got in the car after, adrenaline's pumping everything, but I felt some type of emotion because I'm like, they really tried to. They really tried to do it. And that's why I kind of feel that this team is different. And you know what? We'll find out on tomorrow, in my opinion, if this team is different. Game five's historically in the second round. We've gone back to Toronto 2-2. We played Atlanta 2-2, and we lost both of them. And that's where this series swings. But at the end of the day, you'll talk about Joel and everything and how he played at the end of the game, Sixers blowing a lead, all this stuff. What I'm not going to do is apologize for winning a playoff game in any way. I don't give a fuck. I said it. You win by 50, you win by one. It counts as one in the win column, and all you got to do is get four. If you go 4 of 25, but your four shots are in the biggest moments of the game and they help your team win, I don't give a shit. No matter how it happens, just win in the playoffs. So what I'm not going to do, people are trolling me saying the Sixers should have lost that game, all this shit. The only reason the Sixers aren't down 3-0 is because of two prayers from Harden. Fine. But they went in, and it happened, and that's basketball, and they're up 2-2. The reason the Raptors won the fucking championship is because gravity decided not to apply to Kawhi Leonard. It's simple as that. Like, you don't apologize for winning in the playoffs, and that's not what I'm going to do. It's 2-2. We're headed back to Boston. Check rock, and let's see what happens. Best of three.
What's the actual confidence level Sixers and about six. Winning that game?
We can win. No, we can. Yeah, we're going to win the series.
No. Obviously, you can win the series, but, like, be real with the audience. Like, do you actually feel good about...
Listen, I'll tell you, I'll be honest about how I feel after game one, right? I'll tell you exactly how I feel honestly about the Sixers. I am in no position to accurately pick any of these games anymore. Anything can happen, and my heart is just so emotionally invested in this series. Like, every game I think we're going to win. I feel like I'm a player in that locker room, and that's the mentality I have to have. Like, we're going to win the game, and that's how I feel. And I know I'm saying right here now, it is biased. I am sick in the head. I can't formulate my brain to tell myself, well, we might lose this one, but we'll get game six and we'll go back to seven. No. That's not how my brain works. We're going to win every game in the playoffs that we step on the court for. And I know it's crazy, and I know it's insane, and maybe we won't win tomorrow, and maybe we won't win the series, but that's just how I'm wired. I can do that with, like, an Eagles Week 10 regular season game like I did against the Commanders, where I said, if there's one, this is it. Sixers playoffs, it's not. I can't do it. And to be honest, Jack, I thought about this a lot. There's nothing more in my life I want than the Sixers to win a championship. I'm dead serious. I mean it. I thought about it, watching the Joel MVP speech, everything. I have invested so much of my well-being emotionally into this team for so long. Every day I go on Facebook, I look at Facebook statuses from 14 years ago. The other day it was like, Doug Collins should be coach of the year because we improved by 14 games. I looked it up. We improved to 500 that year. So it's like, I have been so involved in this team, watching Tuesday regular season games in November, complaining about them, overreacting to them. There's nothing. If you actually asked me, I'll give you $1 million cash or the Sixers can win the championship, I think I would take the championship. I'm dead serious at this point. There's nothing more than I want to see Joel Embiid holding that trophy. I need it. I need it. And I will... You can tell that, like, how much losing this series would hurt me right now.
Yeah, it's
kind of probably really exciting for you.
No. You're going too hard into it now, like, where you're saying it's worth more than $1 million.
Well, the reason is because I see that this team is different. I see that this team is different.
They're not.
They don't win that game yesterday. They don't win that game. They don't win game one. Jack, you don't know.
No.
I'm sorry, you don't.
I No. So if you're going to go on that whole rant and say you can't be unbiased, I have to give the unbiased view. And you got to sit there and you don't have to agree with it, but you have to allow me to offer an outside opinion. But what I'm saying is, it's to the point where I know that this loss, because it's probably going to come in game seven, that's just how this shit goes, will crush you to the point where it's not fun to make fun of you. Like, the Eagles Super Bowl loss obviously ripped you apart, but that's different. Like, you weren't like even supposed to be there that season. It had been such a joyride, and the Eagles have had success. This, I think, might be, this actually could break you, it seems like. And I don't know if I could knowingly root for that. But anyways, back to the series and not your physical and mental well-being. Yes, the Celtics should at least, at the very least, be up 3-1. They should have taken advantage of game one with Joel out. They should have closed the game. They were minus 1,000 on the live money line when they went up 5 with 2 minutes to play. PJ Tucker, huge play. They could have hit the buzzer beater. I mean, they should be up 3-1 at the minimum. Their net rating and all this stuff is more than Philly's was when they swept Brooklyn in round one. But James Harden, holy shit, welcome to the postseason. The month of May is yours, my guy, has hit two massive shots, and that's how the cookie crumbles. Now, it's down to a three-game series. Shit can bounce any way. And the reason why the better team wants to play a seven-game series is because sometimes that James Harden ball bounces out and they're up 3-1 as they deservedly need to be. But it's 2-2. And the Sixers are one good game from Joel Embiid away from the MVP of the league. That's the thing, is why if I'm a Philly fan, I'm sitting here like just jammed up, because I don't care about the last four. I care about if in game five Embiid decides to come out and have the game. Like, he needs one game this playoff, one game to put all the pressure on Boston and bring it back home to Philly. And you can just sit there knowing that it hasn't come yet, and maybe it's coming on Tuesday night. With that being said, Boston's the better team. I don't really get the idea from you that, like, you guys are the better team. I don't see it that way at all. Yeah, I don't really see it that way. But the series has been shortened. Now, they're still at a sizable advantage. They have two home games. You guys have one. They're 7-point favorites in game five. You guys are 7-point dogs. But you did the job, which was get it evened up, get Joel healthy. Holy shit, Joel Embiid, it was like watching a plane crash in the fourth quarter and overtime. I felt really bad for him, because if James Harden misses that shot, the conversation around Embiid this morning would have been painful. Like, I don't even know if you could have watched TV.
Cuck of the week? Go ahead, just do your cuck of the week.
Cuck of the week is Joel Embiid, because he just watched his team get taken over. And maybe, you know, maybe he's like, my wife deserved a better man, because that's what it needed to happen on Sunday night when James Harden hit that shot. When PJ Tucker had the biggest play of the Sixers season up until the James Harden shot. And then after having the biggest play of the Sixers season, told Joel Embiid, yo, stop being a pussy and getting down. I mean, he was making Al Horford look like Shaq on the defensive end. It was insane. But the beauty of sports is we overreact to everything. And because the Sixers pulled that game out, they're at 2-2. They have a really live chance in the series. Now, as far as this team is different, I get what you're saying, that they don't pull out these games in the past. But to be truly different, you got to win game five on the road. You got to win the series in six.
Like I said that.
There's things that still need to happen for me to see that it's different. Did the Sixers escape with the win that historically maybe they wouldn't have? No. But did they also blow a 16-point lead and probably should have lost that lead and lost that game? Yeah. So while they're different, they need to be levels different to win a championship, right? They got to be a different
we'll find
level
out tomorrow.
Of different.
Find out tomorrow we'll or find not, out and tomorrow. We'll come home, win that game, and then we'll find out next Sunday on Mother's Day, which we all know treats us very, very well. But yeah, Joel Embiid for three quarters was fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Yeah. Had a great game. And then even early in the fourth, his jumper was going, and you could see him getting gassed. You could see the whole team getting gassed. And then from, like, the eight-minute mark in into overtime, five-minute mark in into overtime, I felt like I was watching 2018 again, all over again. Mm-hmm. Immature Joel Embiid, bad body language, but that's part of the reason why this team is constructed differently, I'll say, is because we've never had that type of PJ Tucker. We've never had anyone getting in Joel Embiid's ear. We never had anyone when Joel Embiid's body language is down and Joel Embiid's just moping around. We've never had him someone to say, hey, square up and figure it the fuck out. Nobody can guard you. And PJ did that, and that's why this team is constructed different. And Joel said it in the post game. He said, I was horrible. My teammates let me know that, and I'll be ready. I'll be ready for Tuesday. I will give you a little bit of betting advice. You can fade the fuck out of James Harden tomorrow. Man's played 47 minutes yesterday. Come on. I was surprised he got up after a day and a half off.
Yeah.
But tomorrow will have to be, in my opinion, I'm not necessarily expecting James to do it again. It's a Joel masterclass, and the role player's got to hit some shots. And that's how you come out of game five with a win.
Yeah.
And simple as that. It's best of three. Let's fucking play. Play ball. But you were declaring it over. You were declaring it over when we were coming back to Philly, 1-1. And now you look like a fool. You look like a fool.
No, I definitely don't look like a fool because, like I said, it should be at the minimum.
You said they were winning in five.
Yeah. And when they win in six and they lose on a buzzer beater, you know, it's margins in this stuff. But maybe the Sixers will prove me wrong. Maybe you guys will lose to the Miami Heat and Max Strus in the conference final.
Why the Heat?
Yeah. Because it feels like it would be more fitting for you guys to finally get through.
No, but like, why would the Heat be in the conference finals?
If Emmanuel Quickley's ankle doesn't heal in time.
Oh. Is that the reason you lost by 20?
Yes. He sprained his ankle as we were on the comeback trail. But let's talk about Suns Nuggets. Abe, you were flat out wrong. Flat out wrong about the Suns and Nuggets. You said you're not picking against the Suns because they have Kevin Durant. That ain't why. It's because they have Devin fucking Booker. Devin Booker is literally the best player in the world at the moment, currently at this time. If the season were starting for next season, no, he's not my first pick. But at this moment in time, Devin Booker is unfathomably unstoppable. And that includes playing in a game last night where Nikola Jokic had 53 points and 10 assists.
Super valuable. Devin Booker. Super valuable, Nikola Jokic.
I mean, that's
53 and 10 in a loss. Should have had 38 and 17. That those assists might have been three-pointers, might have been the difference. All I'm saying.
Yeah. Right. How could he ever play as well as the MVP did last night? But right. Devin Booker, holy shit. And people on Twitter are like, the Suns have no chance in the series because what are they going to do? Shoot 80% from Booker and Durant the rest of the way?
That's what I said.
I guess. No,
I was spot on. I said it because of Kevin Durant, but Kevin Durant also had 36, 11, and 12, and 6 last night to match Devin Booker. It's just Devin Booker is 34 of 43 over his last two games from the field and is just not seeing anything but water when he looks at the rim. But this is kind of what I expected. It's like, this is how the Suns are going to win, and this is how they can win. They have two killers that can score the basketball at will, and that's what they're going to need to do. And that's how they won these last two games, and now it's a series. And Kevin Durant and Devin Booker have a little bit of confidence under them. But this feels like 3:30 next Sunday, Game 7. Like, I can just see it, you know?
It feels like the Nuggets are going to win Game 5 by, like, 30 points. That, I mean, unless you could get Landry Shamet to score 19 again, I don't even know where they... Yeah, I know. I don't even know where you go. But, yeah, the Nuggets are the better team. But once again, anything could happen over the course of a couple games. And what happened was Devin Booker shooting 90% from the field. For a guard, it's just... unheard of how hot he is right now.
Does Nikola Jokic have a left hand?
No, he probably does.
He should have dunked that ball at the end, huh?
I think the MVP. I don't know about dunking, but he has a left hand, that's for sure.
I'm gonna stick with Suns in 7.
Okay. ragging on Jokic after last night is low-hanging fruit and kind of weak sauce.
He should be suspended.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say next. If Nikola Jokic gets suspended, that's like the funniest joke in the history.
If it wasn't an owner and it was just a genuine fan, do you think he would be?
No. He's not suspended under any circumstance. No.
Why?
Well, I guess
you can't put your
Miami
hands on a fan. Malice at the palace. The fan
put his hands on Jokic or in the region of the Suns guys were being such scumbags. Like, let the guys play the sport. They're like withholding the basketball as if they're playing the game. The owner then flops. Honestly, it was kind of embarrassing from the Suns' point of view. Like, because it didn't seem like he did it as a joke. Like, it actually seemed like he was looking to like pick up a technical foul, which was just so stupid. I'm like actually annoyed by what happened. Obviously funny first, like absolutely hysterical. The owner's gonna flop against the floor.
I had a block.
You had a block on that call? Yeah. I'm surprised they actually didn't go to the monitor to review, not attack, but if it was a block or try. I would put it at a 0% chance. I don't need to do a whole guarantee because the NBA, you know, do the Suns make more sense for the TV ratings? Yes. So there's always a chance. But come on, you're not suspending Jokic in a pivotal game five
but
for pushing the owner.
If that's Draymond Green,
yeah,
you'd be suspended.
Yeah, because Draymond's not the two-time MVP, the most important player on the Nuggets. And look, Jokic does have a slight history with the Miami incident and the Morris brother, but come on. The guy flopped. If the owner hadn't flopped, then we're probably in a whole different situation. But he almost made a mockery of the situation. You're not – if they suspend Jokic – I want to
talk
to people
that – If you're a Nuggets fan, you stand up and see that and you go, ref, flop!
I want to see the people – I need to talk to the people who think Jokic should be suspended. Like, who is out there, unless you're a Suns fan, of course, but who is out there like, he needs to be suspended. He pushed the owner. He didn't even push him. He, like, just extended his arm. I would argue, like,
I mean, that's what Jason Tatum did against Maxey on his go-ahead shot.
And that didn't even get called in the game. So why are we calling
that
off the court?
That was egregious. That and the Marcus Smart charge, egregious.
No, the smart one wasn't egregious. It was a tough call in the moment.
I mean, how does he stay still? But Joel Embiid's moving sideways and Eurostepping. I don't know. We already talked about the Sixers. I'm just still mad about that.
I've still got Nuggets. I'm gonna go Nuggies in. Yeah, I think seven. But I think you just don't want to get into a game seven with Devin Booker and Kevin Durant right now, I think is the feeling in Denver. But I'm very confident the Nuggets will win game five. That'll be a decent bet for me. Knicks and Golden State both try to do what the Sixers and the Suns did, which is even up the series tonight. How am I feeling about the Knicks?
Plus 4,300 to win it all.
There's playoff players and there's not playoff players. And to be quite frank, this is why I get worried about the Sixers, is because Harden and Embiid's styles haven't matched the playoffs historically. I think the last 7 minutes in overtime show why Embiid maybe struggles a little more in the playoffs, is because you get down to clutch time, the spacing gets limited, the defense intensity ramps up, and you struggle. Harden has shedded all the doubt, you know, for this playoff series. But Julius Randle has been a non-playoff player now for two consecutive times in the postseason. The Knicks, I mean, the craziest stat of all time. He's shooting the third lowest field goal percentage in NBA playoff history. In the history, every player who's ever played in the postseason, he's got the third lowest. The only two guys who have shot worse are literally, they're not even plumbers. They're so old. 1930s. That's how bad the shooting has been from Randle. And I'm not here to say, like, I expect this to turn around. Could it increase to, like, 40? Could we get 40% shooting out of him tonight? Maybe. But his play style in tight spaces, he's not an elite shooter. So when people are closing out, and it's just the Knicks are in a bad spot because they're the more talented team, but they're not built perfectly for the playoffs. The Heat do two things well. they do Jimmy Butler well because he's a superstar in the postseason, and they space the floor and play elite defense with the pieces that they have. The Knicks do the opposite. The Knicks have really talented players who are just not really built for the postseason, for unique matchups, for all these things. So what do the Knicks need to do? They got to out-hustle the Heat. And that's where the Heat's culture has kind of beaten them out in this series. You're getting outplayed, out-hustled, out-coached, on top of the fact that your guys aren't playing well. It's just a recipe for disaster. Now, could the Knicks come out and, you know, flip the script and hit some shots today? I think my hot take, this is a hot take. I was saying this at halftime of game two. I've been begging for Evan Fournier minutes. Fournier minutes.
Wow.
Because you need spacing. And this lineup that they're rolling out with Hart, Randall, and Mitchell Robinson offers zero spacing. Like, absolutely none. On top of it, RJ Barrett's on the floor with them. You've got zero spacing. Jalen Brunson is a really good three-point shooter, but he's not an elite three-point shooter. So you got to go with Grimes back in the starting lineup. And now Quickley's had a really, really bad playoffs, but he at least offered spacing. But he's now probably going to be out for the game. So can you, the same way the Heat used Duncan Robinson, they play him for 6 minutes. If he makes his first two threes, they let him run, and then they do the same thing in the second half. They hide him on defense. Can the Knicks do that same thing with Evan Fournier? It's what worked in game two, was just spacing the floor, and the Knicks hit some shots.
What worked in game two was Scott Foster. You need Scott Foster minutes just as much as you need Evan Fournier minutes, brother.
That could be half of the argument. But down the stretch, Knicks did make some threes, and it comes from spacing. So Grimes is really the answer. Like, we need Quentin Grimes. Happy birthday, Quentin Grimes, to play well. But if not, you gotta bring Fournier off the bench for 4 minutes. And if he sucks, then you don't play him the second half. But you gotta play him at some point, I think. So we'll see. We'll see with the Knicks.
Shit's a wrap. That's how I genuinely feel about it. I thought the Knicks were... I do think the Knicks are more talented. I think the Knicks are... I shouldn't call them hot, because, well, relative to this series, I'll call them the hot, stupid girl, whereas the Heat are the cute Harvard girl, in my opinion. Mm. And it's like, you want to wife up the Heat, and maybe you want to have a one-night stand with the Knicks. This is not a surprise to me whatsoever. It feels like the Knicks' inexperience is coming through, and the moment is a little bit too big for them, but I could be eating my words in a matter of 12 hours if they go back to New York 2-2 and have the Garden on their side. If they go back 2-2 tonight, where does your level of confidence winning the series go?
I got to see how it plays out. Honestly, my confidence has just been on... I knew Spoelstra is the better... I knew he's the better coach in this series. There's no doubt about that. Maybe I was just more hopeful that the gap wouldn't be as big. Tibbs has had a pretty bad series, admittedly, and I think most people would agree with that. So if Tibbs counters and the Knicks look more prepared and have more counters to the Heat counters, then I'll say, all right, 2-2. We haven't played our best ball yet. We've got two of the next three at home. I'll take our chances. If I didn't feel good after game two necessarily, because outside of just one coaching change, it still felt like we were getting out-coached. So it comes down to the coaching for me. But no one fears playing in Miami at all. And we'll see. Well, Jimmy's been everything I thought he'd be. He's the best player in the series, but he's not averaging 37. So that's why I figured we had a good chance in the series. But we'll see. We'll see what the Knicks do tonight, especially with Quickley out. That could be slightly detrimental to the squad. But do you have a cog of the week?
Yeah. Not having to do with sports, though. Just me wanting to bitch about something. That cool with you?
Yeah, go ahead.
Technology. It's great, right? It makes our lives a whole lot easier. But there are certain aspects of technology, and this is why they're my cog of the week, that is doing too much and actually makes my life harder. Two examples of recently over the past week. The water machine at my office broke. Like, the whatever. They put the tube on it, or the big jug, and it comes out filtered water. It broke. So we were just doing water bottles for a week. And then they got this new fucking iPhone 28-ass water machine. And instead of putting it on and pressing the button, you know how you do this, Jack? you put the water bottle on, and then there's like a row of buttons as if it's like an oven, right? Mm-hmm. And instead of pressing the button, you have to hold your hand in front of it, like it's motion sensor, like this. And if you don't, if you move your hand even a centimeter, it stops, it buffers, and it keeps going. You have to hold your hand in the perfect spot in order to get the water to continuously flow. It's just like, why the fuck isn't this a button? Is this a COVID protocol, like when they put the pool tubes in the golf holes because they didn't want people putting their hands in the golf holes? That's one example of when technology is just doing too much. Give me a button. The other one, and I feel very strongly about this one as well, you go to a public restroom, you go to the a Knicks game, you go to a Sixers game, you go to a restaurant, you poop, you pee, you do your thing, you wash your hands after. Air dryers are so stupid. They stink. Give me paper towels 8 days a week. I don't think anyone ever has a full 100%. They don't have to like wipe a little bit of drops on their pants after when they use an air dryer. There needs to always be at least the option of a paper towel. It's the whole environment thing probably is the excuse. So why am I wiping my ass with paper toilet paper? Why don't we do an air dryer for that? Why don't you have bidets? Like, why do I need that? It's like, so technology has bugged me in two ways in the last week, and there are plenty more examples of this. But with technology, with takes, with betting, with anything in life, sometimes less is more. And that's, I feel very strongly about that.
Yeah, I'm aligned with you on the air dryer take. There's no doubt about that.
What do you think about the water machine? It's just a nuisance.
Well, the water machine, I think they're just trying to save water, which is, again, like an environment thing. Yeah, it's annoying. I don't know if that's a COVID thing or if it's a if it's an environment thing.
I think it's a technology thing. They're just trying to be cool, and they're not.
Yeah, they're definitely not.
Like the refrigerators with like the touch things, and you can play music on your fridge and all that shit. What do we need that for?
Yeah, those always crack me up. The coffee tables that are also speakers and. There's so many silly things out there. But, hey, if it's your thing, it's your thing. Eagleson wants us to do an internet graphic of the week. I actually just want to talk to Eagleson.
Yeah, I do too.
You know, we've kind of mentored him over the past 3-plus years, and we tried to help him. We really did. We tried to show that there's confidence that you can have, but at the same time, You don't over. It's one game at a time. You know what I mean? It's like you can say we finally got over that hump. This team is different. We're going to the Stanley Cup Finals, but you got to win game one, and you got to be dead set locked on that, and not worry about any of that. So where's that left us? We're down 3-0. We are down 3-0.
Before Eagleson goes, did we ever think that we'd be? I mean, we probably did. We'd be sitting in a position where the entire year when Eagleson comes on and talks about the Leafs, it's like we haven't gotten out of the first round in 20 years or whatever it's been. Could you imagine if the year they get out of the first round, they don't win a game in the second round and they haven't won a round two game in 20 years, and that's the new take? Because then we look at the Leafs get to round two next year, they win game one, and it's like a parade outside of God knows where, Tim Hortons, like it was the Garden every time they win a playoff game. It just, all we need for Eagleson, let's be honest, the series is probably a wash, and he's going to get on here and spin it like the child that I raised him to be. But for Eagleson's sake and for the last 20 years, we just need one. You can't leave this series and say, we still haven't won a game in the second round in 20 years, despite getting there. Andrew. Happy Monday. Good morning. Yeah. Welcome to the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't really know where to start with this. I guess I'll say we got the first monkey off our back in getting out of the first round and finally getting here. Why not get this other one coming back from a 3-0 lead? Like, we've gotten the first one. I don't see why we can't get the second one. Bobrovsky, he's the type of goalie where he can go from Vezina caliber, as he's been this series, to borderline unplayable, as he was literally like 2 months ago. So he's the type of guy that can flip on a dime and just be completely terrible, and then who knows, we could take that momentum all the way through. Florida, we have to remember they were still an 8 seed. They're still really shouldn't be that great of a team. I don't know how the fuck they're here. You look on all the deserve to win-o meters, they didn't deserve to win any of the games in Boston. we outplayed them every single game except for last night. And yeah, that's just where I'm at with them. More realistically, this is a terrible look for the Leafs fans that were outside after we won the first round chanting, "We want Florida," before them and Boston had even finished up their series. That makes us look like a bunch of idiots now. And other than that, you guys are right. I was so dead set that we would, like, it would be a wash to the cup, like, no fucking problem after we got out of the first round. And this has humbled me like nothing before, because I was so certain, and now I feel so stupid because I was so fucking sure that this was gonna happen.
Why,
like,
were
they finally
so
got
certain?
The monkey off their back.
I don't even understand.
They got the monkey off their back, and but the thing is, all going back all these years, they've been a favorite. They've been one of the best teams, and it's like, if they could just get this stupid mental block out of the way, they could go. Now they're getting fucking swept by the 8th seed. Are you kidding?
Jack, imagine if the Sixers get the monkey off their back, beat Boston, and then get swept in the Eastern Conference Finals. That's like what it is. It's like I feel like you finally crossed the finish line. I hope you take our own advice.
Because you're the one that's saying this is the conference finals against Boston. I'm just saying.
Olsen, the way he is, maybe I need to dial it back a bit. I probably won't if we beat Boston. Let's be honest. I'm going to be naked on the streets celebrating as if we just hoisted the trophy. Eagleson did say one thing, and I want to locate this. Deserves to win-o-meter? Where's that at?
Yeah.
What's that?
So you guys aren't on any kind of hockey Twitter, I imagine?
Johnny Laz, that's about it.
Yeah. So in hockey, pretty much every fan base after the game, I don't even know where it comes from, to be honest with you. I don't know like what site like does this, but they always come out after the game and people talk about them. There's a deserve to win-o meter. I can go find them for you guys as I'm talking about this. And it just takes into a bunch of different metrics, like what, like I don't even know exactly what it does, but it shows you the percentage. It has a nice little meter with some nice colors in the team logos, which team deserved to win. Florida got outplayed every single game in Boston and then every single game against Toronto except for last night. And we don't really know how they're winning. It's a little bit of luck, a little bit of guys getting hot. Bobrovsky outplaying everyone, which no one really expected. That has a lot to do with it.
Don't forget the refs.
So that's the other thing. Wes McCauley, as I talked about last podcast, the ref who his brother-in-law had a little situation with the Leafs coach. He testified against him in court. Not good. The NHL, in some fucking how, does not see any kind of conflict of interest there. Funny enough, they don't get one single power play that entire game. Not a single one. And there was plenty of missed calls. And they called a few soft ones for Florida, too. It was like, okay, if you're just not going to call any, then put the whistle away, and then let's just do this. But you can't be given, I think Florida got like three or something. So that doesn't make any sense. I don't see how the NHL saw anything wrong with that. It doesn't make sense to me. McCauley Gate, whatever you want to call it. I feel terrible.
Are the Leafs dead?
We're not dead just because of the Bobrovsky factor. That's the only thing keeping us afloat. Barely. We're hanging on by a thread.
And if they win game four, your mentality switches to don't let this get to five or they're in trouble, I assume. Because I'll tell you how I spun it, right? I didn't watch much of the Sixers game on Friday night, so like I wasn't as mad as a lot of people, and they were going down 2-1. And what I said was, listen, win on Sunday, go back to Boston 2-2, it's a best of three series. Lose on Sunday, and it's 3-1, and don't you dare let this come back for game six. Finish it in five, or you're in trouble. And that's kind of the angle that I took. I was like, if this comes back to Philly, we're going to win game six at home, obviously, and then game seven.
I feel like that kind of feeds into the momentum that Florida's had too. Like if we could just kind of kill that, I feel like we could take some of it. And like Bobrovsky, he's so shaky, he can turn on a dime like that. That could be one of those things. If he has a terrible game four, and we turn that momentum even a little bit, they start to show their true colors, they're really the eighth seed like we know they are, that could happen.
It seems like you need to steal their heart in some capacity.
I'm an eternal optimist.
You're an eternal optimist.
And I will bet on the Timberwolves to win the West, the Pelicans to win the West. I'll bet on F1 drivers who are in 18th place to come from behind and win. I'll bet on like the Jags down 27-0.
I don't like where this is going.
Like, if I think there's any sliver of hope, even if the odds aren't great, I'll fire. So I was curious what you guys were, and you're 13-1 to win the East now, which I guess puts you at probably like plus 600 or 700 to win the series. Maybe it's just because the odds aren't big enough for me being down 3-0, but even I wouldn't touch the Leafs with the 10-foot pole. I think you guys are unfortunately dead.
26-1
Look,
to win.
I can't. Okay. Yeah. Like I can't blame you there, Jack. All this team has done is prove that they have some kind of mental block. Like, I don't know what the fuck their problem is. They should be able to do this. They have one of the most loaded rosters in the league. It doesn't make any sense at all.
They're just losers, probably.
When do you blow it up?
Now I don't know what needs. No, they would. One of the core four needs to go if they get swept, and then the coach needs to get fired. I'd keep the GM for another year because he is really good, but I'd fire the coach, get a new voice in there, see what he can do. But hey, it's not over yet. It's not over yet. We don't need to talk like
one at a time, brother. One at a time.
No.
All right, boys.
I just feel like an idiot.
Let's make some predictions by Sunday night's podcast. Oh my god!
If I have to do another fucking game seven. At record post games.
We're doing the studio. If
I'm actually like, no.
Yeah.
That's my answer is no.
Yes.
Come on, you need it in person.
Maybe we do a little game seven watch party stream.
Oh. We could do that, or we could do it.
We're winning in six though, so it doesn't matter.
By Sunday night, we will have three answers. Yeah. Next game seven Sunday or Monday?
I think all game Sunday sevens would be Sunday. Yeah.
All right, so we'll have an answer on Philly. We'll have an answer on the Knicks. And the answer will be, am I on a early AM flight to Toronto to link up with Eagleson for game seven?
Knicks game seven would be Monday.
It is Monday? Friday and then jumps to Monday, right?
Yes. Potential for three game sevens on Sunday as it stands right now. Suns, Nuggets, Sixers, Celtics, Lakers, Warriors. That would be a fucking day that I wouldn't enjoy
at all. All right, let's make those predictions. Eagleson, give us all three. Yeah. What will we be talking about Sunday night?
So Leafs game seven won't actually be till Tuesday.
Oh, it's Tuesday.
Which kind
of? Of next year?
Lovely. Yeah. No, so game six would be Sunday and then game seven on Tuesday.
All right, so
but anyways, I mean, Leafs, how could I not? They'll win next game. Bobrovsky, he's gonna get all messed up, get in his head, and we're just gonna keep the momentum going. Matthews is gonna come back. He had a terrible game and he's just gonna light everyone up, and then from there. I mean, like, I don't watch enough basketball to really give a great opinion on this, to be completely
honest.
Keep
in mind, I'm rooting for the Leafs.
How could I not ride with the Sixers? How could I not? So, Sixers in six, like Abe said, it doesn't even get to seven.
My fucking brother. My brother in Christ.
What was the last?
Who cares, brother? You said it all. Knicks Heat.
Knicks. You guys are toast, I feel like.
Toaster strudel.
That's what I'm hearing. That's what I'm seeing on the timeline. I don't really know shit. But
when you sit in the background of this pod, do you just listen to everything Abe says and no one else? Man.
No, I hear you. I hear you too. But
no, my confidence in the Knicks is very low. There's no doubt about that.
You don't seem like you have, and it could just be the false confidence I'm falling for. It doesn't seem like yours is there as much, and I believe Abe.
Don't let the confidence fool you from the fact that I am scared as fuck. Like, I'm just being honest. These situations make me stay up at night. They give me anxiety. It's Boston, second round, three games for our season, pretty much. And I'm confident, but I'm shitting my pants in the same breath.
Real life prediction. I think by Sunday night, this is going to be group therapy. That's my heart says it's going to be an ugly scene next Monday's podcast. But hey, I've been wrong plenty before. not wrong on Mage, but been wrong plenty before. True. And let's hope I'm wrong for the 100th time. Fam, have a great week. Good luck to all your teams that are still competing in this hell that we call the playoffs. Much love. Peace.